in formal discussions with the Jiang Zemin in June 1991 at her house in Bangkok and on an outing to the River Kwai in Kanchanaburi, Thailand. Recorded and edited by Jonathan and Sarah. Speakers include Robert, Sarah, John and Ivan.
So how do you feel about the meditation courses now?
We had some long discussions last week, and certainly I've got a slightly different viewpoint than I had before, although I think my wisdom's a little bit too weak to decide either way for sure. Like, I'd like to think that both ways have got the benefits. This is what I'd like to think. Whether that's true or not, I'm not sure. So I'll just have to let it ride and see which way I decide.
Do you see it as a matter of choosing this way or that way?
I hope we don't have to. I don't have to do that either. If I do intensive meditation with a teacher, certainly what I've learned here, I can see how I can incorporate it a lot, especially the anatta part and not putting in effort all the time, which I definitely used to do, and which seems to destroy wisdom, trying to, if there's a feeling of me putting in effort, and I can see where that's totally wrong. You know, this is so good to learn that. And also the seeing invisible object, which Kunsi Jin emphasised a lot. I've already seen benefits in there. So I can see that I can incorporate what I've learnt already, and hopefully if I do intensive meditation, it won't be so much with a wrong view of me trying to get somewhere or attain something, rather than just letting wisdom arise naturally, which I think you have to do.
But do you think it's possible to do some intensive meditation without making the special effort that you used to do, or without wanting to get somewhere?
I think you could do it. Say, we wouldn't call it intensive meditation, but I think I could go to a centre and practice more by myself. I still see benefits in being by yourself and not talking a lot with people, even though I realise you can still develop while you're working, while you're talking, but I still see benefits in being able to be away from people to a certain extent, and just have that quietness is still useful.
Is that your nature, or is that because you think that it is helpful?
I've always sort of liked that to a certain extent.
Is that your daily life?
It's hard to say, Kentigen, really, I suppose, but I've always found in my life that the times I'm alone where I can study, say. I like to study too. I don't see so much enjoy an intensive retreat where I couldn't read it all. I'd like to do a bit of study at the same time, and I do find that I like to be by myself.
Can there be awareness right at that time?
When you're with people?
No, at the moment you'd like to study whatever is there. Wanting to be alone or just want to read. Or sometimes you meet people, can there be awareness, natural awareness?
I think awareness can truly arise at any moment within.
Mm-hmm. By that way, do you think that it will help you more to become detached from latent clinging to the result and to understand your own accumulation more deeply or perfectly?
I take that point, but is it possible to have a bit of both? Like, I found in Bangkok, spending a few weeks in Bangkok, even though I've seen that awareness can still arise in Bangkok, and especially seeing and hearing and everything, but there's still a difference from being in Bangkok from being alone.
Some more awareness.
Perhaps I want tranquility.
Can there be tranquility with understanding of this moment?
Yes.
Is that better, keener, because it can understand this moment as not self? So you don't have to plan for the arising of awareness and understanding, because there can be a little bit of understanding and a little bit of awareness naturally, because it's just only a split second of awareness and understanding accumulated from moment to moment without any desire to select or to plan for circumstances for the development of insight. Because one has to understand the very subtle desire of waiting for something arising in the future, like wisdom, because it can be now, this moment. If there is understanding now, it is accumulated rather than read first and then consider and then try to have circumstances for helping understanding and awareness to arise.
What you say is, I can't argue with it. It seems
one has strange. To be very careful and always notice or understand desire, whether it's there, lurking somewhere. When there is no understanding, there is desire. So instead of having desire now, there can be awareness and right understanding even now. And that is the meaning of the middle path, or Pathekaratha Sutta, which means the moment of progress.
What is the moment of progress?
Understanding reality of this moment with awareness is the very precious moment, because it's the moment of progressing in understanding Dhamma.
Getting back to desire, we desire lots of things, and we don't try to choke off that desire. Is there anything wrong with the desire for tranquility?
No. It depends. It depends on when you have the desire for tranquility, you desire to have my tranquility.
What's wrong with that? We desire all sorts of things. Desire to satisfy my urge, my
You don't have to plan to have desire for things, right? But you have to make circumstances to have desire for tranquility to be fulfilled. But you don't have to go away from this moment that, and there are desire or attachment of tanha arising. So there can be understanding of the conditioned desire. You don't have to plan for desire to arise.
Some people go a long way to
even so
to have a particular restaurant.
Right. But it's moved from moment to moment with desire until there is understanding that it's not so. Desire is a reality. Otherwise there is no way to eliminate desire at all. Because you think that you will get rid of desire somewhere and sometime. But what about this moment? There is lopa, when there is no understanding. Looking at the flower, pick newspaper, things around. So what about having understanding of the conditioned lopa? That you cannot do anything. You don't have to plan to have it. There are conditions for lopa to arise and to be understood that it's only a reality.
Can this kind of understanding develop while we are seeking tranquility?
Before seeking for tranquility. Now, are you seeking for tranquility? There is lopa from moment to moment. Why not understand it as just a reality? Because lopa is the condition or the second noble truth. It's the cause conditions for cycle of birth and death. So if there is no understanding of lopa as just a reality, lopa will move you around all the time, not looking back to see that when there is no understanding, there is lopa. How can you see lopa when there is no awareness of this moment? You don't have to go away seeking for tranquility. Because it's here.
I think what you are saying is you are stressing the difference between being, for example, in a quiet spot because one's following one's lobha and one's natural inclination, and being in the quiet spot because you think that this is the place to develop more wisdom. Yeah. So it's a difference between following one's lobha, which we all do, and having the wrong idea that this lobha is actually something noble and good.
Right. That's the big point, isn't it?
For example, if you say something like, you like to be on your own, when Khunsu Chin asks, well, is this your natural tendency? The reason she's asking is because some people naturally like to be on their own, but some people go to be on their own in the temple because they think that this will lead to enlightenment.
Right,
and
right.
This is what the main point of what you're saying.
See that people just want something that hasn't come yet, like tranquility. What about the understanding of this moment? Because one will lose many, many moments of understanding the conditioned reality, which is not self at all, like seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, thinking, feeling now. When there is no understanding of daily realities, it's impossible to have less lopa and have more understanding.
So the main thing is the daily life, just
certainly
everything here. Mm-hmm. I don't really see that, for sure.
But having tranquility can't make us more ignorant. Suppose we want to study Dhamma, we want to learn more, we want to develop a practice, but we see that there's a lot of distraction and confusion in our life. We have the time, why not go to a quiet place and be alone and study and have the tranquility and develop the understanding?
Why not understanding it now?
Now is fine. Now is fine, and then is fine too.
But you waste time.
Okay, so Robert has to decide whether he's going to go to the beach or go to the monastery.
Wasting time deciding.
Not wasting time.
Why not understanding now? Developing this moment of understanding.
You still have to plan tomorrow.
It's I who's planning.
But
what about the understanding that planning is thinking, just thinking, and then seeing is not thinking,
it doesn't
hearing.
Stop the planning, though.
No one has to stop it, but one can develop understanding of the thinking of planning that is a moment of thinking.
What about Khunsu Chin? Perhaps it depends on understanding and how much one has acquired wisdom, but say someone who's working in a very, very busy type of job where it demands, say, a computer thing or something.
Yeah.
I haven't got a job on that, fortunately, but where you have to continually think a lot about things that are not connected with Dharma at all. And it seems like people would have less time to develop, or do you feel like people can still know that they can still understand the thinking and seeing and everything, even when they've got to, or it seems like they must use thought a lot in a way that's not useful for Dharma.
If there is enough understanding of reality, there can be awareness developing from time to time.
From time to time.
No worry about future or wanting to have more awareness without enough understanding of daily life. That person will think that they will have understanding when they have tranquility. So they try to have tranquility each time so that they can have understanding later. But for the one who knows that in order to eliminate the idea of self from all realities in daily life, even at moment of getting angry, worry, or any kind of reality, there must be understanding that it's only a characteristic of Nama. That's all. So one can see that in order to have less and less attachment to the idea of self, Right understanding must understand realities in daily life in details, very, very detailed.
I think we all cling very strongly to the idea that by right thinking, by thinking about Dhamma in the right way, this will help to condition moments of reality, but moments of understanding and awareness of reality. But why do we hold so strongly to that view? Because when we think about it, really, we know that awareness and understanding can arise at any moment, and they can take any object as reality. But we all cling very strongly to the idea that by thinking in the right way, we will have more understanding and more awareness.
So, now, there are conditions for awareness when there are right thinking, right understanding of reality.
Isn't it because there isn't enough confidence in the power of awareness, so we're still trying to limit the object and thinking that it can be at certain times and not at other times, so there's more likely to be awareness if we're thinking of Dhamma but not when we're thinking about our work, and in that way we're limiting the scope all the time?
I read in one sutta, I think, where the Buddha said that someone who's developing in the practice wants wisdom. It's something like this, Kensho Jinam Prabhupada. As the wisdom grows, some thoughts will stop and a different type of thinking will arise, so that quite naturally, without any eye trying to do it, there may be that there is more thinking about Dhamma anyway as wisdom progresses. Is that right? Do you know that?
There are many realities arising and falling away all the time. There can be object of understanding if there is awareness. So why do we talking about story of these realities instead of being aware and understanding?
Like understanding thinking as a reality.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Do you know the sutta that Robert's referring to? Are you familiar with?
I believe the Buddha taught a lot of everything, all causes and results. But the purpose of his teaching is to having understanding of reality of this very moment. When one reads a sutta, it depends on understanding too. When one reads and knows that what he taught is to have understanding right now, then it talks a lot. Whatever one reads, it agrees with having understanding. Not wasting time. It's like there's fire on one's head.
Right, once.
Well, now, there's fire. You don't have to run away and find up water.
You don't have to wait a month to go down to a monastery and then practice. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Have you found in your experience at meditation centers and temples, have you come across people who really would like to change their character or have different kinds of thoughts?
I think there's an extreme amount, a lot of people, including myself in the past, that go to temples with a lot of wrong view. I think it's very common.
Really would like some complete change or to get rid of all anger.
People go in they don't really want to see anatta so much as change themselves or something. Yeah, I think many people
become their idea of what an enlightened person should be like or something. I wonder a bit the idea of having a totally different set of thoughts. Again, it's very easy to have the idea that with more understanding this is what the thoughts will be like, and to head for that rather than understanding this moment. And understand one's nature or one's tendencies as they are.
Well, I think it still depends a lot on the teacher that is at different centres. I think some teachers are particularly poor and some are probably quite good, and I think that's the main thing. And the amount of time that people spend there. I mean, I think if people go down and 10 days and looking for some sort of experience, I think that's almost beyond, they're almost bound to go in the wrong direction, really. But perhaps people that take it slowly and have a good teacher and are prepared to look at the present moment, it may be okay.
We met someone, in fact he had heard a lot from Khunsu Chin. We met him after he'd been living in a temple in Sri Lanka for 2 or 3 years. And he told us, he said that his whole aim was to totally change his personality. This was his goal, wasn't it? Do you remember him?
Yeah.
His whole purpose was to become a totally different being. And
well, yeah, I think I started off, I thought I'd give it 2 years and I expect to be enlightened by that time. You start off with wrong view and hopefully come out of it. But
if you are urged to be aware and understand of some particular objects, instead of understanding that awareness itself is anatta, it can arise at any time. It can be aware of any object. What do you think? What would you like to follow?
I think if I come across Khunsu Chin and Rina before it started going to centres, I'd probably feel that I could see that it'd be very. I'd probably stay just developing in daily life. But perhaps accumulations have changed a bit. And I feel now that.
What characteristic that you'd like to change most?
No, I don't think I have to change a characteristic. I understand.
What about the characteristic of avijja changing to have to be the characteristic of avijja, more or better?
Well, that is the only way.
Yeah.
Sure.
Just to understand reality.
I'm interested when you say that you think that maybe it's useful for you to be on your own or have time on your own. Useful in what sort of way? Useful in terms of understanding more or just in terms of time to think, or in what way is it useful to be on your own?
At the moment I feel that when I'm around a lot of people and doing a lot of things and very busy, there's a tendency to get very absorbed. Okay, and not be aware of the present moment. And yet, when I'm by myself a bit more, I feel there's less tendency to get absorbed into objects, into people, into thinking, into everything. And more tendencies for understanding and studying things.
So what kind of exercise would you like to have?
Among
people or alone in the room?
Sorry?
What sort of exercise that you would like to have?
What do you mean exercises?
Developing understanding.
No, I don't think there's that much difference in the way that I would practice, whether I'm alone or with people. It's just that I feel both are useful, because you can sort of test understanding when you're with a lot of people and things are maybe a bit distracting. So you can test understanding, but at the same time, it seems that sometimes understanding can grow better
Doesn't show that you need more development of understanding instead of trying to avoid. For example, we can go to a concert, many people, but there can be awareness. Isn't it better?
That's true. Yeah.
For example, I could say conventionally by natural tendency, if I'm with people too much, talking too much, I tend to get rather carried away and absorbed in the conversation and maybe say things that afterwards I regret and eat too much, that it's good for me just on a conventional level to have periods of quiet and periods of resting, not because I think that there's any more understanding when I'm quiet and when I'm resting, but just conventionally I'm with people all the time. I get very tired and get very grumpy when I come home.
Those are realities. There can be understanding of any moment. Let it be
even those grumpy times.
That's right. My natural tendency, maybe one does spend more time on your own as a break, but it can't be like that all the time, so things can never be exactly as you want it. The point is to develop more understanding whichever you're in, not to think that in one you can have more understanding.
Well, I really accept that. I think that understanding can be at any moment, and we shouldn't try and suppress anything anyway. So, I think it's wrong view if we do think that we have to be alone to develop understanding. Nevertheless.
Or it's wrong view also if we think that we shouldn't be grumpy to develop understanding. To be brave enough to accept whatever is conditioned at that time. We think that there can only be understanding when we're quiet and peaceful and being generous to everyone around, then it's kind of limited.
In the Buddhist world, that's the main sort of view, isn't it? That first you have to have samadhi, tranquility, and then afterwards there's more chance of wisdom arising. But in actual fact, that's not necessarily true, and that wisdom can grow right at the moment when you're feeling most agitated. At that very moment, you can know.
When you're losing your temper with someone.
When you're losing your temper, you can know that as a characteristic of nama, know it as anger. And so wisdom can develop right at that very moment where you're at least tranquil.
What is real?
Nama and rupas.
So, anything which is real. Most people have the idea that there is self, so they try to have this or that circumstances. But when there is more and more understanding, one realizes that one cannot do anything because each moment is conditioned. To understand that each moment is conditioned is the proof that you have developed more understanding of realities.
Why do so many people think that they must be tranquil or develop samadhi first?
Because they haven't developed the Eightfold Path.
I was going to say earlier, I think Robert mentioned that in effect it seems that there's more understanding and awareness when he's on his own and quiet than in other situations. That could indicate that there's a different idea of what understanding and awareness is. But is there any basis for that within the teachings, that it should be that way? And secondly, I think the other question that follows is, does that mean, therefore, that one should seek the solitude in the belief that there will continue to be more awareness and understanding in those kind of situations, more so than in ordinary, everyday kind of situations?
And I would say that whenever there is no understanding, there is lobha. So right at that moment of thinking like that, is there any understanding of reality as not self? If there is no awareness, no understanding, it's lobha. Not many people can understand lopa as lopa at all. Mm-hmm. Even right now, there are lopa, but it's only thinking about lopa when there is no understanding, which is the Eightfold Path with awareness. But when there is awareness, lopa cannot hide anymore. And in order to eliminate lopa, there must be understanding of lopa. Otherwise, lopa is there.
Hidden lopa.
Driving one around all the time to this or that way, this path or that path, not looking back or look around and see where's lopa. But whenever there is no understanding, there's lopa. When there is not unpleasant feeling, no dosa or no kusala moment.
What about just moha?
It's in between.
So lopa is dosa we can recognize fairly easily, but lopa is very, very
it's hard. There all the time,
yeah,
from the time one gets up until the time one
And it's what conditions the doser. Why do we suddenly find it uncomfortable in the traffic in Hong Kong or in the noise or surrounded by the people? It's because we like being on our own in the quiet, so that's why we have a problem when we're not in the quiet. Why, as soon as we go out of the tranquil temple, do we suddenly feel agitated? Because suddenly we don't have the tranquility. Do you remember that story that Gabby has? This is a German friend who was living in Bangkok, and she used to go to the meditation temple in Bangkok. But what she found was that every time she left the temple, went back into the streets in Bangkok, she was twice as agitated as when she went into the temple.
So in the end,
she stopped going to the temple because she found it was making her less able to cope with Bangkok rather than more able to cope. So the test of the practice should be whether it's helping one to cope more easily or less easily with one's...
Or is one just attaching to tranquility, to quietness, which is quite common, of course, with going to quiet places. Yeah.
So, Kundung Den, what do you have to say? You like being on your own? You like nice, quiet, tranquil places?
There can be awareness and right understanding even when she is in such situation because it's her nature. It depends on one's nature.
It depends on one's nature. But we shouldn't force ourselves to go because we think that if once we're there we get wisdom, that's wrong understanding. That's
how do we know if it's our nature or not?
Now, this moment is conditioned. Whatever you think, whatever one thinks, if there is no condition for such thinking, that thinking cannot arise. Even thinking is that moment, lopa, which thinks. See, there is no understanding of lopa. While one wants to have less lopa.
What I was saying last time was here that we see the big lopa, like. Say I want a piece of chocolate or something. I see that lopa very, very seems to be very easily, but it's the hidden, subtle ones that we don't see, isn't it?
Because there is no development of the eightfold path to see it. There are more moments of the subtle lopa than the strong one. So in order to have understanding thoroughly, there must be development of understanding in details, in detail for each moment, which is lopa too. Because after seeing there's lopa, after hearing there's lopa, so when one skips developing understanding of lopa after seeing, hearing and so forth, how can one understand lopa? The reality of lopa.
Actually, it never gets any easier because there's always more and more subtle lopa. So, always more and more levels of lopa.
That's why
Panya
must be keener and keener. Otherwise, it's not the development of right understanding, which is the Eightfold Path.
And how do we learn to be more aware of the subtle lopa? Is it by reading and studying and considering, or hearing this sort of thing?
Understanding the past, the development of Eightfold Path, the first round, the Satyayana, really understand the path as the path.
The Satyayana, is it the truth?
Of the path. No doubt. No misunderstanding. It seems like it is shorter to have tranquility first, but it's not that at all.
Well, a lot of what people thought to think of as being tranquility or calmness is really lopa anyway, isn't it?
Certainly.
I mean, there can only be real tranquility at moments of kusala, so if there isn't a moment of understanding or generosity or sila at this moment, then what we're taking for tranquility. It's just a pleasant feeling of rebirth.
Right. This is a critical point that Kun Su Jin pointed out to me last week, that perhaps even what I thought was not vipassana, but what I thought was samadhi. Because I said that often what I used to think was vipassana was actually samadhi, and Kun Su Jin pointed out that it quite likely at times wasn't even samadhi, it was more likely...
how it could be calmness, and the difference between calmness and lobha.
Yeah.
And if you don't understand these fine points, it's going to be confused all the time.
Right.
So that's a good point to bring up, the objects of calmness and what it really is. It's very strong.
I don't really understand it.
Because there are so many realities that should be understood as not self. Otherwise, one skip and then one thinks that one has great understanding of reality. But in reality, if there is no understanding of these little moments, it's impossible to say that one has developed understanding enough to be able to eliminate the idea of self.
I think it would be very useful if you could explain to Robert more about what samatha is and the difference between samatha and vipassana, because in the meditation centers a lot of people have a different idea of what it is, and that's why there's such a lot of confusion between tranquility and calmness, and why people have the idea that it would be better to be in the forest or in the meditation center. But if people realize that a lot of the idea of what they have with calmness isn't really calmness, it can be very useful. So what is samatha?
So the question is, what is samatha?
Basically, yeah.
Yeah. Can we say that samatha is kusala moment? Any moment which is kusala.
But vipassana is also a kusala moment.
Certainly, in vipassana there is not only panya or vipassana, there are also samatha and vipassana.
So vipassana includes samatha.
Yes,
oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay. It's not something totally different
no.
in that sense.
But for samatha, tranquil meditation, it leads to only tranquility, but not the understanding of realities as not self.
Right, okay. Does samatha have a feeling of detachment with it too?
From?
From the object or from... I'm not sure.
Not from the idea of self.
Not from the idea of self.
But from attachment to sensuous object only.
Oh.
Only to sensuous object.
Right, I knew of something. Okay. So, you'd be observing the breath or some form of the body, some sort of bodily sensation perhaps, and feel it and have a pleasant feeling. But you may not be actually detached from it. You may not really be developing samatha. Is that correct?
What is the understanding at moment of having, what you say, tranquility at moment of concentrating on breath?
I'm not sure.
What is breath? What is the reality that we call breath? No reality, or even that is reality, but one takes it for breath.
Okay, so it's just a moment of touch at the nose or something.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reality, just the hardness or...
Yeah. Vipassana doesn't have to call it breath,
yeah.
But for samatha, there is no understanding of that reality as just a reality. So samatha pavana thinks that when there is understanding of breath, the mind can be calm. But when there is no understanding, just wanting to concentrate on breath, can one say that there is calmness at moment of wanting to concentrate on breath?
It possibly seems like a calmness in relation to normal what you're used to, because perhaps it's less dosa, but probably there's subtle lopa there, so it's not true calmness, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Is that why people? Is that why we think that there's calmness? Because it seems like there's more calm than normal.
Do you think that when there is no understanding of breath at all, there can be calmness? Just by concentrating on it.
Well, I understand now because I've, mm-hmm. I've listened and I've read, and I realize that it's not true calm most of the time.
For it to be samatha, there are 40 objects of calmness.
Yeah.
What is the way that breath should be considered as an object of samatha for it to be a moment of tranquility?
Samatha bhavana is not only the object of samatha. But samatha bhavana is the understanding, the moment which is kusala accompanied by panya. Otherwise, it's impossible to develop either samatha or vipassana. So it's not that anyone can develop bhavana, samatha or vipassana, but only those who have kusala moments with understanding.
So
with, if there is no understanding, just concentrating cannot be samatha bhavana.
Just concentrate, because that's what most people would think.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I used to think, concentrating, having the feeling of the breath or feeling the body or whatever. Virtually, most people definitely think that that's a moment of samatha.
Because they think that tranquility is a moment when citta does not change object. Just fix.
That's right,
the mind on one object, and that is samatha, because the mind does not wander around. But in reality, it must be kusala citta.
Related to mindfulness of death.
Varananusati.
Yeah, it seems.
Yeah, right. Any object that helps the mind to be tranquil with understanding of life, but not just concentrating on breath without any understanding and wanting the mind to fix on that object only.
Because there are 40 objects on samatha, but the only way that one's mind can be calm is by reflecting in the wise way with understanding at the level of samatha. It's different from the understanding at the level of vipassana, which understands the reality as reality, is not self.
Right.
In samatha, the object is a concept. So it has to be the wise reflection at that moment. So by reflecting wisely at this moment, how our life and everything we mind so much about depends on the breath, it can be a condition for calmness at that moment, for an instant.
But,
just like if we...
But there is still concentration on the breath, even with this kusala.
Not concentration, it's awareness.
Well, you can say whenever there's awareness, there is right concentrating automatically without thinking about it.
But when there is concentration, it doesn't mean that there is right awareness.
No, it can be right or wrong.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you see that this moment when there is attachment to whatever it is, can one is wise enough to aware of breath? See? Mahapurusa.
To have jhana with breath is
Because even now, the reality of breath is only tangible object. And the vayutatu, the motion, that touches the body. Why do we select breath, which is more subtle?
To just reflect wisely, as we were mentioning, on breath or death for a moment can be conditioned for calm or detachment as part of daily life without any special practice. So this is
but
the way
it depends on whether breath appear or not, or one is seeking for it. For example, now, does breath appear?
There may be conditions to reflect on it.
But when it does not appear, should one think, just think about it?
If there are conditions to think about it, why not? Like,
but it's not the moment of being aware of breath, only thinking about breath.
Right, it's thinking. Mm-hmm. But it may be better to think wisely than to... Because we can't control, we can't have moments of right understanding all the time, so any moment of kusala is...
So it depends on whatever appears to help one to understand it. All samatha objects condition for having less detachment, less desire.
Less desire, less anger.
That's the point of them. That's the main point of all samatha, to develop detachment.
Right.
I think Kunshichin's point, though, that is that normally when we talk about samatha of breath, that we are choosing breath as the object.
Yeah.
With desire.
With desire. Well, it must be with desire. Otherwise, why choose breath as object? When she says, does breath appear now? The answer is no, it doesn't, of course, because we're caught up in other things, if you like. There's other kinds of desire. It doesn't matter, but it's not natural for breath to be the object at this moment if there's other desire appearing. But if the only times that breath appears is when we select it for meditation object, or if we think that it appears naturally, but in fact it appears because we have the idea that it's good for it to appear and it's good for it to be an object of our contemplation, then there's subtle desire. So it's all the same sort of thing. It's a manifestation of our desire to have this particular kind of development which we hold to be worthwhile. Whereas before we'd never heard about this kind of development, breath never appeared as an object. We still had anger and attachment and we liked this and we went there and we did that. But all these things we now put aside for the sake of having this thing called breath that we've never even really ever thought about before, but which now suddenly is the desirable object.
I think that desire is not easy to understand. So when we talk more about desire and understand lopa better and better, is the way to have less hindrance to development, understanding of reality.
You emphasize knowing the subtle lopa because that's the one we overlook so much.
This is not as subtle yet.
That's not subtle.
It's not half subtle.
That wasn't a very subtle comment.
Because it shows when there is some understanding.
What about the four positions, Kunshichin? We talked about that a little bit. I looked up the commentary to the Satipatthana Sutta, which I'm sure you know, and it talked about, it's got the four positions as a monk. When he's going, he knows I am going. When he's standing, he knows I am standing. When he's sitting, he knows I am sitting. When he's lying, he knows I am lying. As if that's...
Satipatthana Sutra.
That's in the Satipatthana Sutta, and the commentary goes on to say that, but it's not in the way that even a dog knows he's going, but it's different. A monk knows that it's merely oscillation, vayo, caused by citta and such like. I've got it all in here. But it seems like in that particular part of the Satipatthana Sutta that the monk is encouraged to know as much as possible the different postures if he's decided, right, this is a good object to develop vipassana from. He can use that exclusively, but I get the feeling you would say he just uses that when it arises, and he should use all the different objects in the Satipatthana naturally.
Same question. What is real?
What is real? What arises through the six sense doors in the present moment?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Whether sitting, standing, walking, or...
It's like breath. It's breath is known only when the characteristics of breath are known.
Right.
When it's... The quality of harvest motion is understood, and one understands what breath is. But otherwise, it's only just thinking about breath, really. And the same with when walking or standing or sitting. The monk who knows the characteristics of, through the sense door that make up that act.
Okay.
Would be different to the person who just walks thinking I'm walking.
But there is a sense of present moment even while walking, even though it's possibly not as true a present moment as just knowing any object that appears, but there is still a sense that one can have some degree of concentration, possibly with desire, on the whole posture and come to know it more than one possibly normally does, like moving my hand, say, my hand, but moving the hand. There's a degree of concentration there. Perhaps one's understanding it a little bit more in the present moment. Than if one's not trying to understand it. The cheetah that allows the movement.
That is not awareness when you talk about what condition the movement of the body. Okay. But at moment of moving, what appears? Really?
I'm not sure.
So, when it's not as clear?
It's not clear, no, but perhaps if someone...
Perhaps, but when any reality appears, there can be understanding of that reality which appears, but not when it does not appear.
So trying to look for special realities in this way, is that what you're saying? It's not exactly right?
It's the self is trying. The I who is trying.
Same as looking for breath.
It's the same sort of thing, yeah.
The only way you know, the only way that can be known that there's movement of hands is because realities arise.
Right.
Those realities can be known. But we don't know them. We just think about moving the hand.
We can ask, like, while you are sitting now, what appears?
Hardness.
At moment of hardness appears, is there any idea of sitting?
At that moment?
At hardness itself.
No, not
at that moment. Is real? The sitting is real or the hardness is real?
The hardness is real.
Uh-huh. So forget about the sitting position. Otherwise, it is atta sanya. I was there sitting and touching. While in reality, there is no one who is touching, just a reality which experiences hardness and hardness itself, only a moment. This is the way to reduce the idea of I am sitting into just a moment of experiencing an object, so that there is no I, exactly no I. Otherwise, when you keep the body sitting in your mind, it's impossible to get rid of I am sitting and touching.
Even though you may be thinking that it's just...
Because like there's no reality to be proven that it's not I anymore.
And this subtle rip has happened to arise.
Hardness cannot be I anymore when there is understanding of hardness and the reality which experiences hardness. Because it's only a very short moment of hardness and the experiencing of hardness.
If there's wisdom there, but even though there may be the experience of hardness right now,
mm-hmm.
there may still be an I experience in the hardness if there's no wisdom.
That should be eradicated.
That should be eradicated.
In order to become Sotapanna.
True.
There will be no self anymore, only different realities.
So that's the whole practice. But we don't look particularly for hardness or anything. It's just what is dominant, what arises, what seems to be the predominant.
Do you have to think?
We don't have to think.
Mm-hmm.
So you could also say, in answer to the question, what appears when sitting, you could say visible object.
Right.
Which has got nothing to do with sitting or standing, posture at all.
It's got nothing to do with body, rupa,
body, whatever position the body is in. So that visible object, that moment, could be the object of awareness or understanding. So why choose the bodily kind of rupa of hardness? We which may not appear, why think about sitting or standing?
Well, okay, but in the Satipatthana Sutta, the way it's put, and in the commentaries, it looks like the commentators and the Buddha were encouraging the monks to know the four positions. That's the way it looks to me anyway in the suttas.
That's why Buddha didn't teach only Satipatthana Sutta.
Okay.
Otherwise, he just taught only Mahasatipatthana Sutta without Abhidhamma, without the 28 okay. Rupas.
Yeah. But even when reading the Satipatthana Sutta, in the way that you have explained it before is that when he says develop awareness when sitting, standing, what he's meaning is not sit, stand, but if you are sitting, be aware at that moment. Yeah. If you are standing, be aware at that moment. So what Khunsa Chin has often pointed out to me, which is very helpful, is that in order to understand the suttas when you read them, you have to have some understanding of Abhidhamma. Otherwise, you can read all the suttas in the wrong way with the idea of someone. You should walk three steps forward and then do this and then do that. But if you understand that whatever you're reading, or whatever the Buddha was saying, it's always develop awareness at this moment of reality as not self.
Yeah,
then when you read it, it's quite different. So it's a way that you read it that's important.
And sometimes the rupa in here, the body, can appear too. So there can
subtle
be any kind of reality, can be heat somewhere in the body or motion sometime. It can be object of awareness and understanding.
At that time, if it appears naturally.
Sitting or standing or walking, it doesn't matter at all. Not the whole sitting position.
What it comes down to it is that only realities can be the object of awareness. So if you talk about being aware of your breath or being aware of sitting or being aware of slow walking, then you're talking about concepts, not realities. So in fact, it's thinking, not awareness.
Okay.
So if we talk about harness, it's reality, so awareness can be aware of harness. But if you talk about standing, standing is a concept. What does it mean? Where do you experience it? What is it?
Okay, this is a question I asked last time, but I just want to get it out the way again, Kunsujin. Sorry to probably repeat it for about the third time, but can subtle rupas, such as vikara rupas, can they appear when they appear, and obviously they don't appear a lot normally, but if they appear, can they appear as a sort of a mass right through the body, vikara rupa, or is that the same as gross rupa that just appears just as a dot on a particular part of the body? Can vikara rupa, a subtle rupa like that, appear and seem that it's through the whole body?
As exactly as now.
Just like now.
Yeah. Does the rupa appear all over your body?
Not right now.
So, exactly as it is.
Yeah. So it's up to the moment.
Yeah.
The answer's in the moment.
Yeah.
Okay.
No difference. Daily life, reality in daily life is as real as it is conditioned. So right understanding understands it as exactly as it is.
If someone in their meditation practice, if it seems to them at that moment that it appears all over, is this possible or is this thinking and does it matter?
It's like this moment. Does it appear like that all over the body?
Sometimes you can be cold all over the body.
That's right.
All over?
Yeah.
All over? All over, are you sure?
It can appear that way. It
exactly as it is.
It can appear.
But the experience and the thinking follow so rapidly, don't they? And also it can start at the top and very rapidly seem to go down.
Right.
So, but actually it's different moments.
But sometimes it, often it appears as though it's more than one spot. Coldness can appear in quite a large area.
Exactly as it is.
Right.
From moment to moment, from moment to moment.
I mean, if you try to pinpoint and try to say whether it's all over or one spot, then suddenly it's thinking at that moment that's trying to pinpoint or work it out. Or if one has the idea that there is something good about experiencing all over and trying to achieve that effect, then again, that's just following one's desire and nothing to do with
that's it. That's an important point, isn't it? If one thinks that it's good to experience it, then it's bound to be some sort of
following one's lobe again. Right. Nothing to do with understanding, you know, because you think that there's something special about this experience.
Yeah.
So again, in meditation centers, there is a lot of trying to have certain experiences.
Right.
Like there is often the idea that if you can feel these sensations all over your body, then somehow that will give you a deeper awareness, deeper understanding, because there is the idea in some of these practices that if you can understand the sensations or the feelings, then you can understand other things that are harder. But again, it's just like trying to follow or select a certain object rather than understanding what appears at this moment.
That is critical, right? Because
it's the idea of self that can select and choose, and the idea that it's better to have this experience in that one, not wanting to be aware of the anger, but wanting to be aware of this particular sensation.
It's certainly the belief that I had grown up with, to sort of to believe that if you can have certain experiences, know certain subtle sensations in the body, etc., that's a sign of wisdom developing, like you said.
A sign of progress
or something.
Having the idea of being able to experience a different sensation.
But actually, just any experience, whatever it was in daily life, wisdom can develop directly from that.
Yeah, because it does not lead to the attachment of this moment with understanding
of
reality.
It leads to more clinging and more wrong view that this is what the practice
is. It's funny that we should reject the idea of understanding the ordinary things of our life in order to try and understand the special mystical things that we never normally experience. Whereas if you think about it for a minute, what we need to understand in order to overcome, if you like, or transcend, are the ordinary things.
Like Vikara Rupa, one is told that is Vikara Rupa, but that is doubt. It's not the understanding of reality of this moment and become detached from clinging.
It doesn't seem to develop detachment, does it? It actually develops a look attachment because you want those experiences, those seemingly mystical experiences.
There's something very mundane about the development of understanding when you really come to terms with it. It is the mundane that appears, right? And that one is
back to the ordinary.
Yeah. But with understanding instead of all the time with ignorance and attachment.
We had an interesting experience recently, actually. So someone who came to see us also through Nina, a Dutch girl, and we had maybe an hour of discussion about realities and in daily life, seeing, hearing, visible object, and anatta. And at the very end of the discussion, she said, "Well, do you meditate?" Actually, Jonathan gave a very good answer. He just said, well, it depends what you mean by meditation. Because, of course, in the Dhamma sense, bhavana means mental development, meditation at this moment. But you could see she was really interested in the discussion.
We're not meditators, so it's...
But it's like you said last time we were here, if you go to give a talk at a meditation temple or something and you start talking about seeing and hearing some object and people really don't like it, or
it's not like meditation for them.
It's not what they want to hear. It's much more appealing for people to be told, concentrate on your sensations, and oh wow, now you're having the great experience, and if you carry on doing this, soon you'll be enlightened,
right,
and everything's going fine,
right,
and all you have to do is put in a bit more time and effort and you're nearly there, and now you can see you're such a lovely, tranquil person. This is much more encouraging than to be told that what you thought was tranquility is just a lot of robot.
Kusala doesn't arise very often.
Often, and it's all, if it's not gross lobha, it's subtle lobha. So that's why you always say that one has to be very brave to develop and understand.
Yeah.
Do you have any question on the corpse, which is Mahastipatthana as well?
On the corpse?
The nine corpse. If you have doubt about the sitting position,
yeah,
the positions of the body, do you have doubt about corpse too?
Well, I haven't sort of tried to practice corpses.
Why it's in Mahastipatthana section, Kayanupasana Sipatthana?
Why is it in there?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. It says in the Visuddhimagga somewhere that it's related to the fifth and sixth yamas and the vipassana somehow, I think.
Does it mean that any moment can be object of right understanding, even at moment of seeing corpse?
Mm.
So one will not be unaware.
That's the point of Satipatthana.
Yes, and whatever concerns body is under the section of Kayanupasana Sipatthana.
Okay.
So corpse.
Why do we, if it's just an example?
Because one clings to the body as body, a corpse is a body too, dead body.
In the Visuddhimagga, there's one part under concentration that has been referring to all this, so those things. And it says on page 260, this is in the concentration section. You know, there's three sections in the Visuddhimagga: the Sila section, the Samadhi section, and the Panya section. And there's one phrase that says, talking about different development of Samadhi on the body, and it says, the sections on postures, on the four kinds of full awareness, and on attention directed to the elements deal with insight. Yeah. And it says, so it's, and then it says something about the corpses, the nine corpses deal with insight to do with the fourth and fifth and sixth jhana or something. To deal with the danger or fear or some stage of vipassana. But that sort of gives a feeling that postures or the four kinds of full awareness or the elements is somehow tied up a bit with vipassana,
because
more than other types of concentration.
Yeah, because you see that when one sees a corpse, there is idea thinking about corpse,
yeah,
that it's like me, or one day I'll be like that,
yeah,
that corpse is me and me is that corpse. It's thinking first, which can be understood as a moment of thinking too. So it's not like when there is awareness of the elements in the body, which appears to see that there is no dead body or body in that reality. Reality is reality. So it brings the understanding of no self in it. It's
you mean because when you see a corpse, you immediately take it for a being, a person. But then in that case, why don't we just give the example of when you look at your husband or your friend, why do they say when you look at a corpse? Because it's the same when we look at each
so
other.
So it depends really on your thinking that Jonathan is now a corpse. You can do that too.
No,
exactly the same.
So
so it's just meant as a reminder.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or if samatha first and then vipassana.
What is the useful, for it to be the object of samatha, the useful way to reflect is just that this is what we will all become and all the things that we mind so much about, and in the end we will just be a corpse.
Oh, kusala is useful in a certain way, at a certain extent. We cannot have vipassana or satipatthana all day. It depends on conditions for any level of kusala to arise. Sometimes it's only moment of dana, the other time moment for sila, the other time moment for tranquility, and the other time moment of awareness.
So if it is the time for the moment of samatha, what is the understanding, what is the useful way to reflect at that moment? Is it just that this is what the body that we cling so much to will become eventually?
It depends on listening to Dhamma, and there are conditions for that moment to contemplate on the body or to be aware of the reality which appears. And right understanding can understand that there are different levels of understanding of kusala.
But if it is contemplating on the body at that moment, and
it's conditioned to, one cannot change it to be aware of reality.
But I want to know what the useful way to contemplate is.
Listen more to the teachings, and then there are conditions for contemplation to think in different ways. We cannot think ahead of time. It depends on that very, very moment.
I'm interested because actually recently an old man, but quite a close friend in Hong Kong, died, but I went in to see him once or twice just before he died, and he couldn't recognize me. He was so ill with cancer, he was all shriveled up, so it was like looking at a corpse. And of course there's such different chittas and maybe some moments of awareness, but I was just interested in any useful reflections at that time, maybe conditions for metta, or we don't know. But
the best moment is awareness and understanding reality. But there can be other different kusala too, like contemplation, which we cannot tell in what way it would arise at that moment. So just leave it. And developing understanding of this moment. We can think and think and think, but when time comes, who knows whether we will think that way, that we plan to think. The development of understanding of reality is the best thing, the best moment.
Awareness of the thinking.
Yeah. I suppose if we talk about the best way, it's a bit like talking about the right object. There isn't a right one except the present one. There isn't the best way except the way that it happens at that time with kusala.
It does seem that those contemplations, like on the corpse or on the parts of the body, seem to be a way of balancing the mind somewhat in one's experiences in the world. If we don't contemplate them, we tend to grasp at things and chase after the wonderful things in life, experiences. But if they are contemplated, it seems that one's more balanced in the way that one views things. And although it's not a means for enlightenment, or maybe not a means by which one experiences the realities, but at least as a way that one may be less involved in running around in life chasing after those things that are not so important. So I think that when this, for example, if we look at a human being, we might say this human being is very beautiful and this human being is not very beautiful, and I like that human being, he's very beautiful. But when you contemplate the parts of the body, you realize that this human being that looks very beautiful also is as ugly as the human being that is not beautiful. And you can see sometimes all the human beings are the same because they're all made up of ugly parts. And it's like it seems to balance the mind in the sense of not being so affected by one being more beautiful than another. That's what I found anyway in certain contemplations. And I don't know if that's one of the purposes of those particular contemplations the Buddha gave, talked about, whether by doing so a person tends to live their life a little bit less chasing after realities, but sort of settles the mind a bit.
Less indulgently.
Yeah. I don't know if that's the mean, but it seems that if there is the contemplation of those things, the mind tends to not chase after things, or not see those things are not important. Like you talked about earlier, you were talking about not, what was it? First came in here. Blank.
Is that right, Ajahn, that if one reflects properly on things like parts of the body, it will help one to be more modest in one's attachments and
not
more
as even extreme in one's reactions?
Buddha taught us all levels of understanding and kusala. So it depends on each moment, because we cannot have awareness of reality every time. So it depends on that certain moment, whether it's conditioned by conditions for contemplation.
Jesse Long.
If we can have awareness of every moment, one would become arahata. But since one is on the way developing it, there is understanding of this moment with awareness or other moment without awareness. This is right understanding, to see realities as they are, as conditioned moment or not.
It seems that, some of us have more attachments in certain areas than others. Some of us are more grasping after material things than other people, or after, in the case of a male, some would find that, women affect them more than, say, someone else. And therefore, these contemplations seem to me that they're valuable if you're inclined to them.
But not as much as moment of understanding.
No, no. Yeah. I would think that. But the trouble is, sometimes when you have that sort of drive to be able to turn yourself to discussing Dhamma and realities and thinking about realities is difficult, because you're so very caught up in thinking that there's those valuable things to be made in life. Early when I walked in here, you mentioned something. I can't remember why. It's a blank, but you have basically made that statement about the fact that we tend to involve ourselves in worldly things.
You see that if we talk less about the development of vipassana, there would be more conditions for only right understanding at level of samatha. But if we talk more about the development of vipassana, there would be more conditions for right awareness to be aware of reality.
If it's your characteristic.
The more one understands the path, there would be more conditions for awareness to arise.
But obviously we're not going to be talking about Sarvagatana all the time, or we're not going to be considering or developing Sarvagatana all the time. So I think Ivan's point is that, of course, it's useful to discuss and consider and develop all kinds of kusala because impossible to have static tana all the time. So, of course, we know that the best thing is moment of right understanding now, but if it's not a moment of right understanding reality, isn't it useful to have some wise reflection at
certainly, other levels? Certainly, that's why Buddha talked about the 10 parami perfections too.
Why?
Because it's like when one knows the path, but one doesn't have enough parami, kusala, to be ingredient or whatever you say for the development. It's like when one knows the way, but one is so sick, one is so ill with akusala. One cannot walk, even one knows the way, until one has developed all kinds of kusala, and one is strong enough to go on and on the path.
So you mean the reason he talks about the 10 palms
and
is
all kusala
is to build up a foundation,
yes,
strong foundation,
yeah,
all kinds of awesomeness.
Yeah.
Because as I can say, sometimes it might not be the right time to hear or consider or be aware of satipatthana. If one's obsessed with a particular kind of thinking, then maybe the only thing that one can possibly listen to or consider is some useful thinking that is connected with that story or concept at that time.
That's why I would have taught all levels of kusala and all kinds of realities. Akusala dhamma and kusala dhamma, those are different degrees, lopa, subtle, gross, medium.
I think that in, I'll say the West, although it's probably also I talk about the East as well, but when I think of, say, somewhere like the United States or Australia, where we tend not to think about these unpleasant things of life, we hide them away, the sickness, the death, and it's all quickly put aside and hidden, so there's no reflection on it. And the attention very much is on the what is ever pleasant, because we don't realize that lobha is a problem to us. We tend to think that lobha is all, that's what it's all about,
yeah,
is to encourage the lobha, have pleasant things, and get rid of anything that might cause the aversion of dosa. So I think a good dose of reflecting on death and corpses and the parts of the body might be valuable to people who haven't had it.
Buddha knows that Asotapanna, Sakatagami still have lobha. So the first thing is not hiding lobha or not knowing lobha, but to understand lobha as just a reality. Otherwise, it's not the way to eradicate lobha.
But I think that the reason, for example, people would prefer not to talk about death or parts of the body, or, for example, when this neighbor of ours is very ill, none of my other neighbors wanted to know very much. But I think the reason is because it's a condition for a lot of dosa. It makes people upset, or it makes them nervous about their own health or something like this. So people tend to avoid things that are unpleasant. We all try to avoid things that are unpleasant rather than understand it. That's natural, isn't it? If something's unpleasant, if the traffic's bad, we try to go the other way.
It depends on whether you'd like to develop understanding. You just want to have avicca, because one knows that one cannot eliminate lopa for sure, but there can be the development of understanding lopa as just lopa. But you still have lopa, lots of lopa as you'd like to have. Just understand lopa as just a reality, not self anymore.
Yeah, I tend to just think it's a means of making concepts more balanced. Because we have to deal with concepts. We know concept. We talk about concepts not being real. And it is touching. Hardness is what is real. And we talk about that, we know that, but the moments of experience of it is not always there. The sati of hardness for us, or for me anyway, it's not there. But and sometimes the concepts I have get out of control. Those concepts.
What do you mean by get out of control?
Well, not so much. Well, I shouldn't say get out of control, but I would say they're not balanced. They tend to
conventionally
we tend to think that, you know, get things, you know, this pleasure, that pleasure, those things like that. It's lopsided. It's not seeing the world as it really is. It's the Buddha's pointing out what it really is on a conceptual level, what it is. Not only is he pointing out what the realities are, he's also pointing out within concept of the world, he's making it more balanced. He's saying it's not just this way, but it's also this way. It's not just a beautiful body there, it's also the body is not beautiful. In other words, he's talking on a conceptual level. It's making one see what is there conceptually in a different way. I feel that. So what he's talking about is trying to help you to, before you have the ability to always to have the sati of understanding realities, it's helping you just to be able to face conceptual life more realistically. Because that's what we've got to deal with. While we're trying to learn about realities, we've still got to deal with conceptual life, the world.
But is there anything wrong with being attracted to another person that you see as being beautiful?
No, I think that is the way our concepts perceive it. But by showing that there's another way to look at it, makes one also observe it in another way. And observing it in the other way, you can also see the grossness of the body and therefore maybe not attached to that time. And you see.
It seems to me that this is an idea that one has to deal with these kilesa that arise by some counteracting kind of situation or reflection to reduce them or to nullify them or something. Is there any need to have an approach or a technique like that?
No, I look at this way. I was raised in my society to look at the beautiful body and the beautiful this and the beautiful that. And then in Dhamma, I read that there's a different way to see those things on a conceptual level. And I look and I think that's true, it is. The body is ugly. I was never told that when I was growing up in my everyday life. But the Buddha pointed out and said, the body is also ugly. It's beautiful. It has a quality of beauty, but it also is ugly. And this is the reason why it has these things. So you start to reflect that way, that it is ugly because of what's being pointed out to you. And so you start to observe the body in two ways. You see it has its beauty and you see that it also has its ugliness. And I think the Buddha pointed it out for a reason. I tend to feel that reason he pointed out is so that you, on a conceptual level, you look at life realistically, not in a false way, which is, it's beautiful, it's beautiful, it's beautiful, or something like that.
As far as conditions are concerned, to condition such moment, but there are still other conditions to develop higher understanding of reality.
Yes.
So it's just part of life by conditions.
But every time you see someone, do you think, here's another potential corpse?
No.
Conditions by hearing more often, then there are conditions to think that way. It's like when there are conditions for awareness to arise now, it would be conditions for other moment of awareness to arise by accumulation.
Those things that we're talking about, the parts of the body, the corpses, I think in reflecting on them, I myself think about them being as a concept. I'm not thinking that, oh, if I understand this better, I'm going to reach enlightenment or anything like that. I realize that what is valuable is understanding, or at least experiencing
and you
realities.
Know, why do you think that way?
Why do I think that way? Because I think it's only concept.
Because there are conditions to think that way.
Yes.
And when there are conditions for awareness to arise, it will arise by conditions too. So it depends on conditions to think that way or to be aware in some way.
The real test is when there are conditions for the thinking to be carried away or out of control, as you would put it, with no wise reflection on corpses or whatever. But we're used to it, there's a lot of useless thinking, to then have dosa about the useless thinking, and instead of just understand, well, this is, that's also conditioned, because it's not, they're not always conditions to think wisely about a corpse. And so to just to be able to accept the tendencies at that time, you know, however much we don't like it, however much we would like to have other tendencies, but to accept our tendencies as they are at that time, it seems to me that that's the real test. Because that's the reality at that moment.
So by developing understanding of reality with awareness, one will understand the conditions for each different moment better and better.
The reason that, for example, some of our tendencies, as I've been saying, are very, perhaps not very attractive, you know, perhaps there's conditions to get totally carried away with some story which is very non-productive and unwholesome. And so, of course, it takes a lot of courage to be aware of the realities as they are. Is it because of the strong clinging to self, wanting to be a good person or something, that makes it so difficult to be aware of the reality that appears at that moment?
By developing Satipatthana, one will understand how much Buddhacitta one is, full of ignorance and all akusala, a little of kusala in a day.
Could we say that one reason why development of understanding is so slow is because it takes such a long time to develop enough courage and confidence to accept and understand the realities as they appear, rather than as we would like them? can you face it all at once?
Only 6 days. Just 6.
But it seems that the mind door is the most dangerous. It's not so much what is seen or what is heard that is the problem, but all the thinking about it afterwards.
Because of less understanding of the mind door as not self. Because the visible object or sound, smell changes from time to time. But the mind door, keeping thinking about the story of object which appears.
And the mind door can be so obsessed with the object that it can, when it's obsessed with an object, it's not interested in any awareness or understanding at all.
So it's like going against the current of life, desire.
I think it helps a lot to know that these realities, like the obsessed mind and these stories, it helps a lot to know that it's just realities common to all, nothing so special. We're used to thinking that maybe it's, you know, one's own mind that is so obsessed with this, but never mind what the object is, the same, your mind might be obsessed with pretty girls and Jonathan's might be with holy cats, you know, but... or just different objects of obsession.
Buddha pointed out that it's only one way to be aware and understand reality in order to have less attachment to reality as self or something, someone, somebody.
In our last discussion we were talking about kusala and developing kusala, as you put it, for the sake of Dhamma. I don't know if you remember.
Not for oneself, but for
well, I'm not sure if Vajrasattva used those words.
Yeah, but
that's the question. What does it mean? Kusala for the sake of Dhamma.
Yeah. And Nina would like more elaboration on this point.
Because there is no Nina. There are only different Dhammas. So not for the sake of Nina, but for the sake of Namas, Kusala. Kusala Dhamma.
Kusala Dhammas or Kusala Dhamma with a
Kusala
capital D and
Dhammas.
Dhammas.
Yeah.
With a small D.
Yeah.
While there is the idea of self, or while one clings to the idea of self, must it seem that one is developing Kusala or self, or could one say different moments obviously of just appreciating the quality or the kusalaness of kusala dharma, and other moments taking it for self or someone?
As long as the idea of self is not completely eradicated, there are conditions for some moments of the idea of self coming in or staying there deeply.
So before Sotapanna, anyone?
So there will be moments of right understanding, or understand the reality as it is, or the kusalaness as kusala, not self. But then in between there can be moments of taking it for my development of kusala or kunsuchins.
Yes. There are not only wrong view of self, there is also the idea of myself or my thing or the conceit of I, too. Even there is no wrong view, there can be the idea of my things, my body, with lobha or with conceit.
This is why I think it's useful also when one can appreciate the kusala that someone else does, because that is kusala being appreciated for the sake of Dhamma. Or Dhammas rather than for oneself. Appreciation of kusala for its own sake.
I only just picked up the last bit of what you were saying, but obviously if one can appreciate kusala as kusala rather than as someone's kusala, it helps a lot, because when one takes it for someone's kusala, then the next moment it's not kusala, one's disappointed and disillusioned and feels let down. But if one can just appreciate the quality of kusala
temporarily
yeah. without expectation, mm-hmm. then there isn't the whole story about this person being this type and that person being that mm-hmm. type.
Yeah. Because one knows that one cannot appreciate unwholesomeness or unwholesome deeds, one will appreciate only kusala. So the kusala itself is no one. It doesn't belong to anyone.
And it's just last for a moment. We don't know about it. When you talk about the conceit of I, maybe there's no wrong view. So maybe at this moment there's no wrong view of my body, but still clinging to one's body, clinging to one's hair, clinging to one's kusala.
But that's not wrong view. Mm-hmm. You say, what is that?
Lobha.
Lobha only.
One cling with lobha or with mana or with titi.
Ah. Oh. So we can cling to the nose.
As my nose with lobha, but not with wrong view.
So if I cling to my nose, it's with lobha, not with wrong view.
Right.
Oh.
Well,
it depends.
I can be. Oh, I see. If you've reached the
level. Well, no, but even now, different moments. Now there may be one moment, wrong view, that this is my body, this is something, this is someone. And then next moment, there may just be clinging to my leg, but maybe no wrong idea. So there could be different moments. There's not wrong view all the time. Even if wrong view hasn't been eradicated, many moments of lobha in between.
Any wrong view might come up again.
That's right, and so the understanding has to understand the difference between the moments of lobha and the moments of wrong view. So, for example, if I look at Jonathan, there may be lobha, but maybe no idea of something or someone, but next moment. You know, the idea
often
that this is
a I remember what you said earlier, Ajahn, it was about the breath. You said when you realize how delicate it is that you don't hang on to things in the world. You don't, because you realize at any moment you just go. Mm-hmm. The world goes.
Yeah.
And I think that the other contemplations of parts of the body and death and that have a similar mm-hmm. effect on
so
the
both persons. Are objects for samatha.
Mm.
So going back over that actually, it seems like anapanasati is related to death, like I said, in a way. Is that right? Related to the contemplation of death.
Of death.
Very close, I think.
Yeah.
Anapanasati, I've never heard that before, that anapanasati mm-hmm. can be considered as related to the contemplation of death or the contemplation of the corpses.
When Buddha asked bhikkhus about how often in a day that they were aware of realities or development of samatha and vipassana, and some said that while one was eating, and the other said that while one was something, and then Buddha pointed out that while one breathed in and out.
That's right, one because there was one yeah. breath in. Mm-hmm.
And I think the way that you before explained the useful way to reflect on death, it is very similar, but you've explained that all the things that one considers so important, so valuable, so precious can disappear. If there is death at this moment, all these things will be gone. So it's a reminder of how useless all these things are that we cling to, because death can come at any time, and how useful it is to reflect on death very frequently as a way of having more detachment from all these things that we cling to so much, so a way to have less clinging. For me, it's very, very useful.
And the usefulness of being aware at that moment is not just understanding that breath keeps on life going on, but it is moment of awareness too, because in order not to be careless, it's only being aware right then.
Not to waste time and
mm-hmm.
not, be heedless.
Yeah, not just think of death in a certain way or of breath in a certain way, but develop understanding right then.
Right.
I think it gives you energy to develop understanding.
The reminder of fire on one's head again mm-hmm. that can come at any moment. Is this the way also if one reflects on the corpse, a reminder that the body that one clings to so much is really just bits of bone and flesh, and any time it can be.
All the teachings about these objects should bring about a moment of awareness and understanding reality.
They help to condition those moments.
It's not like Buddha urged people to be aware on breath or on death only.
Depend on the individual.
Understanding. Depend on the individual's understanding. For the person who has developed understanding and he listened to these words, there could be awareness right then because of that person's understanding. But for the others who do not have enough understanding of the development of satipatthana, they would have such condition to consider about death. So it depends on the individual's understanding.
Not like the weaver's daughter that Buddha talked about death and then he went away for 3 years and he came back to the village or whatever it was, and she was the only one out of the village that had been contemplating death, and that had helped her to condition, and she came and saw the Buddha, and he gave another discourse, and at that time she attained stream entry.
Some people who read about this will think that she contemplated only on death, but in reality she developed understanding of reality, satipatthana, because it's the only way to condition the understanding of the arising and falling away of reality of this moment. So it is connected with satipatthana.
That's very close. Yeah, I can see that.
Buddha just said that contemplate on death, but for those who have conditions to be aware, awareness can arise.
What you have often pointed out, which is useful, one can read the suttas and it seems that people just hear one or two sentences and then suddenly they're enlightened, but Kunzichin has often pointed out that over many lifetimes and aeons, they heard and they considered and they developed understanding, and say, kusala vipaka, to be born at that time, and so much understanding had been accumulated that it only needed one or two sentences to be a condition for enlightenment.
Strong.
So it's, but what about today? What about the understanding today? So the way is the same for everyone, but we don't know about other people's accumulations. But certainly there isn't any shortcut. So if that understanding hasn't been accumulated enough, it will take a lot more than a couple of sentences or a few phrases about death to.
So it does mean that she just contemplated on death only during 3 years.
Okay. Actually, you can't really contemplate on death without understanding a metta.
More than that.
You have to understand quite a bit before you can do it.
Not quite a bit. Because it has to be the development of satipatthana only, because that is the only way to be able to understand reality of this moment as nama or rupa sharply, keenly, that there can be conditions for the experiencing, the arising and falling away of realities of this moment. So one reads Tipitaka, it depends on one's understanding. Otherwise people would say that, see, she just thought or contemplated on death only for 3 years.
It's actually difficult for Westerners that only read English sometimes with the Tipitaka, because many of the commentaries are not translated yet, so we can only read, except the Abhidhamma, they've got some of the commentaries, but many of the suttas we can only read.
Yes, but when one understands the path correctly and one develops it, one can read it with understanding.
Can develop. From a simple sutta we can understand the deeper meaning.
Kunzichin has a favourite expression, which is one sutta read in the right way is worth all the Tipitaka read in the wrong way, and something like that. So if you read a little with the right understanding and consider a lot, then it's worth a lot more. That one can read through the whole thing with completely the wrong idea, with a completely wrong understanding, and you can see some of the translators' ideas and notes, and obviously they have completely missed the whole point. They might suddenly start putting a little note at the bottom about big self and little self and this and that, and
this is restated.
Right, or Christmas Humphreys or someone, and so it's the understanding that's important when one reads.
For example, the meaning of anatta or anattaness, all realities are anatta. Just as short as this, but it can apply to each moment. Seeing, how can it be anatta? See, hearing, thinking.
How can it be anatta?
The object which is seen must be anatta. And anatta means no body, no thing, no self in it. So its true nature is just an element which can be seen only through eye sense. It does not sit. Visible object is not sitting.
It's just color.
It's not people, it's not sister or brother or anything, because its true nature is just a reality, an element that can be seen. And after that, there is thinking about it later. But since the thinking covers up the falling away of visible object, that's why one always thinks about things and people from visible objects, and then dreams, even at night, of seeing someone going somewhere. See, it's only the story of visible object which was seen in a day.
Well, it's natural to have stories, and even the arahat will have stories, yes, and will think about what's seen and heard. So the aim isn't to stop having stories, no, but to understand that they are only, right, stories. And
because after seeing, the arahata's citta is kriya. But for the people who are not arahata, after seeing, there is usually akusala. In order to change from akusala to kusala, and then after kusala, change into kriya. The same story, same visible object which is seen.
You said before one time, I think, that the arahat doesn't dream, is that right?
No.
Why not? Because there are still conditions to think about what's seen and heard. Why, just because they are kriya jittis, will there be no conditions?
No clinging anymore.
Because
seeing is seen and then gone completely.
So if there's no clinging, no,
yeah,
dreams.
Yeah.
But how about, you know, at this moment there are conditions to think about what's seen? And obviously the arahat will think about what is seen without any lobha. So why will there be thinking in the daytime and not at night? Why will there be thinking in the daytime but not without lobha?
Because
at
daytime there is seeing. Mm-hmm. After seeing, process.
The rest of the mind door,
yeah,
process,
yeah.
I see, but not later.
No.
So you mean there would be the mind door process immediately after the moment of seeing, but there wouldn't, for example, 6 hours later in the day be, mm-hmm, you know,
sorry,
more thinking about seeing.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So an arahant only responds with thinking to the present moment, to the present, to the visible object, that, or whatever applies in the, whatever arises in the present moment. The arahant only thinks about that. So he doesn't have long stories afterwards so much.
There's no person, no being, no intention to follow.
So there'd be no thinking about, mm-hmm, what was seen when he was a child or yesterday,
yeah,
or...
There are conditions for him to think about it,
mm-hmm,
with kriya citta.
Oh, I thought, yes.
Yeah.
So you talk about past life.
Right.
Yeah, but he doesn't dream.
Why can't he dream about past lives then?
I think that it's like the fully... rest time for him.
Yeah. No agitation, no.
Do you dream?
I just said I don't dream.
Every night? Every night?
No, I think you do dream, but you don't always remember.
I dream every night.
I never remember what I dream, if I do dream.
Maybe you're almost there, Ivan.
I'd say so. I said the fact that I remember it doesn't say too much, does it?
The reason I mentioned about the thinking and the stories is a lot of people, again coming back to the meditation centers, a lot of people have the idea that they should stop their thinking or should almost make an effort not to follow the stories.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So this is very, and for me it was a real relief to realize, but it didn't matter. Of course, there are long stories, so rather than trying to stop or control it, which is impossible anyway because of anatta, more important, develop more understanding that it's just thinking.
Right, understand
whatever
there's a reality.
The thinking is the reality, the concepts are concepts, and it doesn't really matter in the slightest what the concepts are, as I say, whether it's Hobie cats or girls or food, you know, they're just different stories. Better be aware of the thinking instead of trying to stop it, which again is trying to control, trying to choose this object to be aware of, trying to suppress certain tendencies. Again, the more control in the world.
I think as wisdom develops, though, there would be thinking that the type of concepts that one thinks about would change towards more that focus more on Dharma type concepts as wisdom develops over a long period. The concepts one has, the thinking, the type of thinking one has, although the thinking might be the same level, you might still think a lot. The type of thinking that one has, the concepts one has, will be more related to Dharma, to contemplating reality, to considering in this sort of way, rather than before one heard about Buddhism, the type of concepts one has had would be quite different from after many years if one was truly practicing in the correct way, understanding in the correct way.
Do you mind?
No.
Do you mind?
Do I? Not really, it's just an observation.
See? It depends. If you mind, it indicates that there is clinging.
There is clinging to having this type of thinking.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah.
Actually, if we're honest, we all mind very much. We would all like to have certain kinds of thinking and not have certain kinds of thinking and have less. So in fact, we mind a lot about our thinking.
That is the measurement of the development of right understanding. It's like when you pay for something, it's the measurement of your attachment.
You mean how much we mind is the measurement?
Yeah.
But it seems that when there's not much understanding, we don't realize how much we do mind. So it seems that the more understanding, the more we are honest and acknowledge just how much we do. If you had asked me 10 years ago, I'd have said, oh, I don't mind what I think about. But in fact, I know now that I mind a lot. But it's better to acknowledge it.
Has to be the individual's understanding that no other people can know better. When one is honest to oneself, one knows how much understanding one has towards the objects which appear.
If one didn't mind, one wouldn't try, like in the meditation center, to stop the thinking or have less thoughts or only think about the sensations or not think about it. It's because one minds so much that in fact one is trying to do all these things, but one puts it in a different way. One doesn't say, well, I'm following this because I mind so much about my thinking. One says, oh, well, I'm doing this because it's so useful to concentrate on the sensations. But actually, it's because one minds so much about the realities that do appear.
I think here you try and encourage people to be honest and really face what's there rather than
to develop understanding.
Yeah, rather than sometimes we sort of try and once we're on, we think we're on a spiritual path, so we try and really push into a dark corner.
Mm-hmm.
All our
because that is not the middle path, then that is not the Sthipatthana. That is not the only way that Buddha pointed out.
It would seem that it's a good thing to mind, though.
Yeah,
with lopa.
Yeah,
motivated by lopa.
Because
it's good
to
mind.
If you think, well, I'm not going to mind, then you don't. And if you don't mind, then you just don't
that
do it.
That is not
lazy.
The middle path.
You can,
that is
you
not
can
the middle path.
Off.
Yeah.
It's a different way to get off the middle path.
But you could just say, well, I'll try not to mind because that's
without,
the better way.
Yeah. Without understanding, with lopa, is thinking like that. But with understanding, it's not thinking like that at all.
It's right down to understanding.
Yeah. Because there can be awareness of any reality. We shouldn't mind of just developing understanding of such and such moment only. Or wishing to have less attachment. What about less avijja, ignorance?
No, I was thinking more. We should mind about going to listen to Dharma and things like that.
Right understanding will condition kusala moment by itself.
There's so much value in listening to Dharma.
With attachment or with right understanding, it depends.
It depends.
It depends.
No, well, yes, but
he's trying to justify his mind.
No, because I get involved.
All right, I would like to go and pick the Pitaka and read it right now. I would like to gain knowledge
no,
right now.
No,
but what about understanding reality of this moment. And by understanding this, it will condition next moment of understanding other reality as well.
I say a talk like this makes one reflect on those things. It makes one, when often in our daily life we don't. So the talk here helps us. Definitely helps us.
So right understanding can understand different moments as they are.
Yes.
But avijja cannot, lopa cannot understand. Only right understanding can understand what is meant by the middle path.
Right reflection.
Can minding ever be kusa?
I probably won't. No, I mean,
but knowing that moment of minding can, is that?
No, I think there's a lot of things in our life that doesn't matter. We do it without any understanding, without any, you know, and do it with a lot of lopa. So I'm just saying, throw in minding, and so we come to these sort of discussions more than learn.
What you mean is, if it gets you here, it doesn't matter what kind of
walk. Because you're going to have lopa all the time anyway. You're going to have all this delusion and dosa and lopa, so a little mining, if it's going to get you to a discussion on Dhamma, might be a good thing. Rather than saying, well, it doesn't matter, and sitting over there and wasting your time.
So it's better to have lopa and be here than not have lopa and be at home watching television.
No, it's better to have lopa wanting to come here than lopa to watch television.
turning on the television or picking up newspaper, there can be understanding of reality.
Yeah, but I'm trying to get to that point, you see. I'm not at the point where there's always that moment of understanding.
But
there's a lot more to be learned, a lot more to be understood.
If there is no development of one moment, can you have 10 moments later?
If there's no, sorry.
Moment of understanding, can there be other moments of being aware?
No.
No penny, no pound.
Right. We have to get to the, you know, there's so much value in talking Dhamma to help the understanding to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of us, and unfortunately I'm one of them, doesn't have those moments of sati and moments of understanding.
That's so why there should be the first round of Ariya Satya. The Satyayana, understanding the development of Vipassana perfectly, clearly.
Intellectually.
So there can be conditions for awareness to arise of any object at any time. Because one has conditions for Dana, one has conditions for Sila, one has conditions for Samatha. What about more conditions for Vipassana or awareness? So that there will be progress in Dhamma.
In those conditions.
More conditions.
Talk with Dhamma.
Mm-hmm. Having the understanding of the path is the right conditions for developing understanding more and more.
So the thought that I should go and listen to Dhamma with lopa could be valuable because it could give the discussion that helps.
Why do you say that with lopa, what do you want from listening to Dhamma?
What do we want from it? Well, understanding.
When there is intention to have more understanding of Dhamma, that is not akusala.
That's not lopa.
No.
Different moments. The right understanding conditions the idea to go and listen, and then attachment to the idea of gaining something from it would be a different moment. Unless you're thinking of attachment to the coffee. So,
yeah, well, I was just going to say, actually,
I know, you come for the coffee.
I come for the coffee. Then I happen to get Dhamma as well.
Right.
He knows you too well.
This has been quite useful this last 10 minutes or so. I can see how you can start to balance the middle path and figure out just what the middle path is.
It seems to me that minding about what we think or what we have awareness of conditions a whole host of reactions, including where we go, how we practice, when we have thoughts that we think are not productive, for example, like the lustful thoughts of a person, that we then try to balance it with contemplation on the unwholesomeness or unattractiveness of the body. And because we do mind about what we have, particularly when we can see it as being unwholesome, instead of understanding it.
Understanding that moment is just a moment of unwholesomeness.
Yeah.
Accepting it as it is.
That's good.
That's what I'm talking about. You should mind sometimes, because when you say, well, it doesn't matter, just watch it. But if you don't watch, if it, at least have understanding of it. Like, doesn't matter, just have understanding. But there's no understanding, it's still the last.
That's flipping slightly to the other side of the middle path, isn't it? It's not quite on the middle path too, if it's like that. That sort of indicates you're not probably really understanding the moment, you're just indulging in that.
I think the answer to that is we're only as firmly on the middle path as we have understanding developed. So there's no point in trying to be more on the middle path than we are capable of being in the first place, because then we have only a certain level of understanding, and to that extent we're on the middle path.
A certain level of accumulation.
It depends on the understanding of that sentence. For example, when we do not have to do anything, just this sentence, we do not have to do anything. So some people would say that, oh, I don't have to do anything at all, I'll go around playing or... But for those who understand that one cannot do anything, just developing understanding only, because one cannot create seeing, hearing, smelling, hardness, anything, just developing understanding the realities of them, that's all. We cannot do anything, we do not have to do anything, just developing understanding only, instead of trying to do this or to go there.
Or trying to get to that point. Even if one uses the phrase watching, which again is commonly used in meditation centers, that even watching is like, it's like one has the idea in one's mind of observing what is appearing. Again, there is the idea of doing something, even if the doing is only observing, which is different from understanding. Because when one has the idea of watching, it's like there's someone who can watch or see what is appearing at this moment.
But that still depends on wrong view, though. Perhaps some people in a centre can say watching or observing, but they may have developed understanding to the point where they know that there's no one watching. They are... It's just the experiencing of the present moment, perhaps.
When one is true to oneself, one knows whether one is watching. It's like one is working very hard. When one has the understanding, one will not use the term watching anymore. Just understanding moments with awareness or moments without awareness, very naturally, because awareness can arise by conditions alternately with moments without awareness. By conditions too.
Not by putting an effort.
Yeah,
and
this is the way to eliminate clinging, wanting, craving for more awareness. Yeah.
Which is so common in meditation centers.
How would a person who has developed practice by regularly going to meditation centers have ever developed the understanding there was no one watching when that was what they started by doing and continued doing?
Yeah, this is true. I think there's probably less chance if you haven't heard teaching like this to get to that stage, but it depends. Maybe people read the suttas a lot and they have a good teacher somewhere that.
But is there any subtle idea that while sitting at that moment there are more conditions for awareness than while walking around?
What you say is very true.
You can be so subtle. Someone can have a lot of understanding and talk very usefully, but still there can be the idea or the clinging that of being able to control, or somehow by being in the quiet room for 2 hours and just observing whatever appears, that this is the way. So it can be very subtle. Actually, I would just mention, because only the Sotapanna has eradicated the idea of self, so there's bound to be moments of watching or observing, or thinking that there's watching or observing. But I think the answer is that only when there's a wrong idea of self is there the idea of observing. And it doesn't have to be wrong view all the time, so it's just at certain moments one might have the idea of being able to observe or control or watch, but in between there can be moments of right understanding, and those are the moments that have to be developed.
At the moment of observing or watching, can it help the understanding to see that there is no self who is aware? Awareness is bright awareness.
To my mind, there cannot be, because at that moment of observing or watching, there is that idea is reflected
something.
By the idea of self. So it cannot. It's not a wrong moment that can suddenly turn to a right moment. For example, someone might say to me, "The only reason you have any right understanding is because you spent so many years in meditation centers, so you needed that to get to this point." But the point is that it's the moments of right understanding and right considering in the middle of all the wrong understanding that condition more moments of right understanding. So it's not the wrong views that suddenly turn to right views, it's the moments of wise reflection that lead to more moments of wise reflection. So that's why the practice right from the beginning has to start with right views.
Can a person who's non-sotapanna experience a moment and understand there's no self?
Yes.
So what's the...
Little by little.
So then the sotapanna is just a situation where there's always the understanding of no self.
No, there can be akusala moments too. At moment of having attachment, there cannot be understanding of reality.
But no moments of wrong view
anymore about realities.